Welcome to Painting the Midnight Oil Podcast with your host, Dan Oils.
So I'm a little late with this latest episode. I've been trying to stick to a routine where I'm recording either on Friday or Saturday to give you a consistent result so you know when to expect the next episode. I wasn't able to do that this week because my family and I were camping. So this is the first opportunity that I've had to return to the studio, my enclosed trailer, my art studio, and record something. Now, because I am recording this at 4:40 on a Sunday, and it's not really early in the morning or really late in the afternoon, it is incredibly hot in here. It's 95 degrees. But I'm going to do it anyways because I think it's important for me to stick to that schedule and provide all of you a product as close as possible to Friday, Saturday when you're used to seeing new episodes. I'm going to talk a lot about my first collection, Sugarloaf Mountain. I'm going to go into great detail about one in particular. Those of you that follow me on Instagram, you are very familiar with this collection, or those of you that have viewed my website, danoilsart.com, Instagram at dan.oils, you'll know exactly which pieces I'm talking about. I've already dedicated an entire episode, I think it's an entire episode, if not an entire episode, a lot of time discussing why I decided to dedicate and devote an entire collection to Sugarloaf Mountain. I go into greater detail about the history behind all of that. I could easily do that now, but I want to spend a significant amount of attention on one piece that was inspired by Vincent van Gogh, because this piece impacted me in a very deep way, in a very deep level, and I wanted to share that story that is connected to that piece. So, going back a few paintings, Sugary Night, and I forget exactly what the influence was for me to start this. I think I was just looking, you know, envisioning Sugarloaf Mountain, and I'm like, you know what, it'd be kind of cool to do something a little bit different where I'm creating something at night. A lot of these paintings are really designed to be displayed or, you know, capturing a moment during the day, but it'd be kind of cool to try and create something at night. I was like, well, how am I going to do that without the addition of lights that don't exist in real life, by the way? And so I'm like, all right, well, I'd have to create like a very bright background using bright stars or moon or planets. And then I started thinking about Starry Night, which is arguably Vincent van Gogh's most famous painting. And I was like, well, what if I just, instead of using the stars, I would create them or change them to look like sugar cubes. So that's why it's called Sugary Night. So instead of the stars, there are sugar cubes, and I basically tried to recreate Starry Night using Vincent van Gogh's style, but also incorporating my own elements to make it unique and to make it symbolic of Sugarloaf Mountain. Now, those of you that have been following along, I try to paint as much as possible, not every single night, but most nights. And a lot of times my window of opportunity is between 9 and 10 o'clock. Now, some of you may be wondering, you know, how is that possible when I have, you know, a wife at home too? And my wife is very supportive of what I do, thankfully. But during that time, my wife is usually reading, waiting for me to come back, and then we'll go to bed. And so at that particular time, it just so happened that she was reading a book titled The Secret Life of Sunflowers. And so when we go to bed, you know, she'll usually kind of fill me in on what she's reading about, and I'll fill her in on the progress that I'm making for my painting. And it's kind of just like a way that we can decompress and talk about something that isn't directly related to our work or our kids, or something that's just more lighthearted and something that we haven't already been talking about, you know, the entire day. So she's talking to me about this book. And she really has my attention because she was like, yeah, did you know that when Vincent van Gogh was alive that no one really appreciated his work? No one really knew his work or bought his work? And I was like, no, I don't think I really knew that. You know, I knew that he suffered from, you know, mental illness, and he cut off his ear in a very manic episode and that he committed suicide. I knew a couple things, but a lot had escaped me over the years. So she's refreshing my memory on, you know, Vincent Van Gogh. And I'm like, you know, this would be a really fascinating book to read. So I can kind of see if there's any other influences that I can use or borrow from the book and apply it towards this painting. While she's talking to me about this book, I'm having my own kind of relationship with Vincent Van Gogh in a sense, because prior to this painting, my expectation for this piece was that I was going to use this reference image and I was just trying to deconstruct his style as much as possible so I could duplicate it myself. It was going to be a very technical and kind of academic approach. That's what I was expecting. But then once I started to get into this, when I was really kind of discovering his style, I started to kind of, I felt like I was meeting him. I felt like he was sitting there teaching me. You know, obviously he wasn't, because he's passed away. You know, I don't know the exact date, but it was a long time ago. I believe before the 1900s. And I just felt like it was a very, like I was literally his student in that moment. And then I would go back into, you know, I'd finish for the day, I'd go back into bed and I'd talk to my wife and she would tell me more about his story. So in this story, again, she talks about how, because Vincent Van Gogh was never really discovered or found or appreciated when he was alive, and his brother, who he was very close with, died shortly after Vincent Van Gogh, I believe from syphilis. His sister-in-law was left with all of his work and was really looking for a source of income, but was also trying to continue not only her brother-in-law's legacy, but her brother's legacy, because Vincent Van Gogh's brother was also dedicating his life to getting Vincent's work out there and appreciated and sold. And so Vincent Van Gogh's sister-in-law made it a point, made it her life's purpose to essentially make Vincent Van Gogh famous. One, so people could genuinely appreciate him as an artist, but also so she could survive, so she could pay her bills, which I found absolutely fascinating. So I keep on asking, so every single day, you know, my wife is filling me in. I'm like, so is this like a real story? Like, I want to believe all these stories that you're telling me, but I also don't want to get too emotionally invested into these stories if I know that they're fiction or they're based on, you know, a real event, but the author's kind of taken some creative liberties and just kind of ran with that story to make it sound better and more entertaining. And so I grabbed the book, and again, this book is called The Secret Life of Sunflowers. I turned to the very back, and there is an author's note. I'm going to read some from this book because I think it is just really fascinating. And this author's note is inspiring in its own right. So that's why I'm taking some time just to read directly from the book, because I found it incredibly inspiring. And I also found it incredibly heartbreaking. So this is the author's note. Again, this is from The Secret Life of Sunflowers on page 393. Quote, "This is the book that broke me. 2 years ago, I saw an art documentary briefly mention Joanna Bonger, and I knew I wanted to write about her. There was only one problem. I write genre fiction under the pen name Dana Martin. Fantasy, romance, suspense. I don't write historical fiction. I don't write women's fiction. I don't write stories based on true events. I threw myself into the work anyway, settling on a past-present dual timeline. I thought that Joe's story was so sad it needed a lighter counterbalance in the form of a modern-day heroine. Since Emsley is an auctioneer, I had to do some research for her, but the effort paled in comparison to the research I had to do on Joanna, especially because her descendants kept her diaries locked away, granting access to no one, not even academic researchers. So I went about painstakingly collecting tidbits of her life through a multitude of sources, a reference here, an anecdote there. I come through hundreds of letters between Vincent and Theo for mention of her. Older books were my best sources, but they were out of print. unavailable in ebook format and were selling in the $100+ range each. I'm pretty sure I currently have the best Van Gogh library on the East Coast. The story I came up with helped me get a wonderful agent. Submissions went out to 20 publishers. All wanted the manuscript. I'm not saying I was envisioning a bidding war. I was. But I was hopeful. Then the first rejection came in. Then the second. Then the third. Then the 19th. The last publisher kept considering it for well over a year. I became convinced that my writing was bad, that I couldn't write, that I shouldn't write again. I ran out of money. I depend on a regular publishing schedule. I started looking for jobs online. After close to 2 decades of being a full-time author, for the first time, I seriously considered quitting. But Joe kept whispering to me from the past, "You can do it. Just do it yourself." She never quit. How could I? Wasn't my whole point to learn about this indomitable woman and introduce her to others? I emailed my agent. I withdrew the manuscript from submission. The story was mine again, its fate in my hands. But I couldn't do this alone. I asked my readers on Facebook to give me an opinion on the project. Several angels volunteered to do a quick read, and they encouraged me to move forward. Without them, you would not be holding this book in your hands. Now here we are. You read the book. I hope you liked it. I hope Joanna inspires you as much as she inspired me. All right. At the very end of 395, I left some of the author's note out. It says, P.S. About a month after I finished writing this book, while I was still cross-eyed from all the research and broke from having to build my own Van Gogh library, Joe's descendants decided to release her diaries to the public and put them all online. They are available for free, in English, in an easy-to-search format. That last paragraph just, like, broke my heart. Because you understand, she details all the hard work that she put into this, all this original research that she put into this, because of Joe's descendants, their unwillingness to publish the information to the public, and as soon as she finished publishing the book, it all became so much easier. After all that she went through, I identified a lot with what this author, Marta Molnar, also known as Dana Martin, what she's going through. You know, she's an artist in her own right. She's a writer, and as an artist myself, there's a lot that I could identify with. Just someone that is passionate about something and completely going after it. Maybe, you know, not letting the inexperience get in her way. And for me, not letting the inexperience get in the way of publicly sharing my art or starting a podcast, but just doing it because we felt like we needed to do it. The fact that she didn't have a teacher, she wasn't formally trained in writing this particular genre, but she felt so passionate to go after that. The fact that, yes, I've taken a few introductory lessons when I was first starting out. That's what got me into this passion. But still going full steam ahead and just relying on our passion and our creativity and our willingness to explore and our persistence and our consistent effort to get us where we want to go. And then just ultimately deciding that what she needed to do, what she felt was best, was just trusting her own instinct and not doing what was expected of her, not doing what she was supposed to do. And I related with her in that way too, because, you know, as an artist, I'm constantly getting these things. Oh, well, you have to go on social media. You have to have a Facebook account. You have to do reels all the time. You have to do this. You have to do that. And if you do those things, I found they really started to mess with you mentally. Because I did my Facebook account. I wasn't getting any attention. I wasn't getting any feedback. And that was starting to break me. That was starting to get on me. And just like the author was saying, I started to doubt myself as an artist. Am I not good enough? Should I quit? And so I talk a lot about that over season one, where you can't let the feedback that other people are getting determine what you ultimately want to do. And I talk a lot about feedback, and I talk a lot about reflection and how important that is. But sometimes it can backfire. And sometimes if you are reliant on that validation, if you are reliant on the positive feedback of other people, sometimes if you listen to it too much, it can override what you truly love to do. It can override what you truly feel is right. And so that's why I no longer have a Facebook account. That's why I no longer do certain things, because it wasn't getting the results that I wanted and it was impacting my confidence. And so I really related with what the author was saying, talking about how she ran out of money, still pursued it. You know, I put my entire life savings in converting this enclosed trailer. First of all, buying this enclosed trailer and converting this enclosed trailer into my art studio, now podcast studio. And right now it's not paid. I mean, it's paid off, but it's not generating income like I wanted. But I'm still going in here. I'm still spending time painting. I'm still, you know, publishing episodes because I love doing this first and foremost. It gives me great joy. And I hope, the hope is that someday there will be a return on that investment. It's 95 degrees. Sweat is literally pouring down my face. But I love it. I love that sacrifice. I love that effort. You know, it makes me feel good that I'm giving this dream, this goal, my best punch. I'm giving it my best shot. I'm giving it my best swing. And so I'm reading through this book, and I realize that it is largely based on fact, but there is a fictional narrative that she is intertwining with this research that she conducted. And for me, there was too much confusion, too much ambiguity potentially as to what was real, what I could trust, what I could continue and carry with and use to genuinely inspire me, and what was fictional, what the author used or how the author may have used her creative liberties to build a stronger or a more entertaining story. So I decided not to read the book. But there was a takeaway from that author's note. And this is an overarching theme in Vincent van Gogh's life. There's this an overarching theme in the lives of many artists, is how artists constantly find themselves surrounded by trauma. And a lot of times trauma prompts people to seek art. It prompts artists to seek art for their medicine, for a way of therapy. And so I couldn't stop thinking about how tragedy and trauma impacted Vincent van Gogh and the people around him. How trauma and tragedy impacted Vincent van Gogh's sister-in-law. How trauma and tragedy seemed to surround the life of this author. And I couldn't help but think about different trauma that I experienced in my life and how that's impacted my art, and how art has been an escape for me, how art has been a therapeutic tool for me. So because I couldn't use this story as historical reference, I decided to research Vincent van Gogh's sister-in-law myself. And so if anyone is interested to learn more, Joanna Bonger is her name. I think I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. There is a very robust article that the New York Times published that I would highly recommend that you read. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to briefly share something from the Smithsonian that I thought to be helpful, that again kind of summarizes her life, so you better understand the context of this character and the background of this character. All right, so this is from Smithsonian Magazine. New biography spotlights Joe Bonger, sister-in-law who helped rescue Van Gogh from obscurity. Bonger, wife of Van Gogh's brother Theo, described her mission as getting Vincent's work seen and appreciated as much as possible. So it says, did you know that Vincent van Gogh's status as an art world giant owes a big thanks to the efforts of one woman? As Hans, Luijten, senior researcher at Amsterdam's Van Gogh Museum, writes in a new biography, Van Gogh's sister-in-law, Jo Van Gogh Bonger, almost single-handedly ensured the artist's legacy, assuming full responsibility for promoting his work upon the death of her husband, Theo, in 1891. So it just talks about the biography. And then further down says, Bonger, born to a middle-class Dutch family in October 1862, was working as an English teacher when Theo, reportedly struck by love at first sight, asked her to marry him. All right, so a little further down says, notes that Van Gogh experienced extreme mental health issues in the months surrounding his brother's wedding. In December 1888, the artist sliced off his own ear in a fit of frenzy, and shortly after the ceremony itself, he attempted suicide. Although Theo believed Van Gogh's condition was improving by the spring of 1890, his hopes were soon thwarted. On July 27th, the painter shot himself with a revolver. He died 2 days later with Theo at his bedside. Now, that particular part really struck me because I wanted to learn more about this suicide. And the reason why is because in the book, The Secret Life of Sunflowers, my wife was explaining how in the book it said that Vincent Van Gogh shot himself in a field and he lay there like for 2 days until someone either found him or there was basically like 2 days where he was just sitting there suffering, dying from a gunshot wound. And the reason why that was so intriguing to me is because I remember thinking, or I remember reading, that most people that commit suicide end up regretting it. And so I wanted to research that a little bit further. Because if that's true, that means that Vincent Van Gogh suffered even more than I had initially anticipated. That he potentially shot himself in a field and then for 2 days regretted that. So had a deep sense of regret, had a deep sense of guilt, in addition to all the legitimate physical pain and suffering that he was experiencing. And so, according to Harvard's website, says Attempter's Long-Term Survival. So it's titled Means Matter. So it says 9 out of 10 people who attempt suicide and survive will not go on to die by suicide at a later date. This has been well established in the suicidology literature. A literature review, Owens 2002, summarized 90 studies that have followed over time people who have made suicide attempts that resulted in medical care. Approximately 7% of attempters eventually died by suicide, approximately 23% reattempted non-fatally, and 70% had no further attempts. That's pretty remarkable that most people that commit suicide essentially regret doing that and do not make any further attempts on their life. And so I found that part of this story, but I think it's also important for our people to know that. Because if anyone that is listening has those thoughts, hopefully that deters them from doing that, knowing that the vast majority of people that attempt that regret doing so and do not make a second attempt. And while I was kind of looking for that answer, and as I was looking for other sources associated with this story, again, trying to get more in tune with Vincent Van Gogh, the artist, the character, the person, especially because I felt so connected to him on a deeper level. Every single time I would go into this studio, I just felt like he was just teaching me in the way that I had to really study the brushstrokes on the canvas, really study his approach to the painting. And before I did all of this, I never really understood exactly why Vincent Van Gogh was so revered. When I look at some of his paintings, and I never really thought that there was anything that really stood out to me that was so remarkable, so unique, that I hadn't seen other artists attempt. It's not until you try and deconstruct Vincent Van Gogh's brushstrokes that you start to understand the depth of his work and the original style that he painted with. And it was something that I wasn't expecting, and it was something that really humbled me. Because you get to see the brilliance behind what he did. So this last article, this last resource that I found particularly intriguing. And this is from the National Library of Medicine. And it's titled, A Reevaluation of the Death of Vincent Van Gogh, Suicide or Murder, the Need for a Definitive Autopsy. So this was published in 2020. So I'm just going to read the abstract because I find it, again, fascinating. And, you know, it gives you some more details surrounding this complex event and this controversy, and hopefully encourages you to research it on your own. It says, Vincent Van Gogh died on July 29th, 1890, from an apparent gunshot wound to the belly sustained approximately 30 hours earlier on July 27th. So again, that speaks to the fact that he may have suffered for a long period of time, or may have been undiscovered for a long period of time. Although little is known how Vincent sustained his mortal wound, art historians have long believed that the death was the result of a suicide, a widely accepted quote-unquote truth for the mysterious death of the then unknown and now iconic artist. The basis and validity of this suicide narrative is still very hotly debated among Van Gogh scholars to this day. We dug deeper into all the circumstantial evidence and testimonies to arrive at a comprehensive overview of the probability that it was likely impossible for Vincent to self-inflict his mortal wound. We used all the available circumstantial evidence related to the day Vincent Van Gogh was wounded to present the information and conclusions as if we were before a judge as expert witnesses to answer the question, suicide or murder. If Vincent did not shoot himself in the belly, a red flag in and of itself. Whoever inflicted that penetrating wound into his abdomen murdered him. In our study, results from firing the same model revolver that allegedly killed Vincent from various ranges, direct contact, intermediate, and distant, demonstrate within a reasonable degree of medical probability, greater than 50%, that it was not probable for Vincent Van Gogh to shoot himself without a described powder burn. And it kind of goes on for a few more sentences, but that's the general gist of the abstract of that particular article, again, published by the National Library of Medicine in 2020. This was a lot for me to kind of take in. You know, it just was sparked, again, by something just connecting the term sugar to another potential piece. I started to, you know, make that connection with Starry Night, Sugary Night, and from that experience, I really started to connect with Vincent Van Gogh, even though he passed away, you know, late 1800s. I felt like he was sitting here teaching me his style. The way that I was able to kind of break down and study his approach, it was just a really personal experience that I wasn't expecting to have. So I really started to connect with Vincent Van Gogh on that artistic level. And then again, just by happenstance, my wife was reading this book, The Secret Life of Sunflowers, that was delving into the life of his sister-in-law, Jo Bonger. And because it was historical fiction, I started to wonder and question which elements and which parts of the story were true and which were made up. So that started my own research with Vincent Van Gogh, to accompany kind of the personal experience that I was having as I was painting this piece. And so as a result of all of these studies and resources that I stumbled across, I really came away with this experience with a couple really key takeaways. And the very first one is, everyone has enemies. And this is someone that is revered as one of, if not the most iconic artists from the 1800s. And assuming for a second that he was murdered, he had an enemy. One of the most well-known artists ever in contemporary life, not just in the 1800s, but his name still resonates with us. Someone that is that well-respected and revered still had enemies, and that's still important for all of us to recognize and to hopefully inspire us to pursue our passions. Because the reality is, in my experience myself, is that no matter what you do, there's always going to be someone that has a problem with you. There's always going to be someone that is not rooting for you to succeed, that is waiting for you to slip up and fail, regardless of what you're doing. And that was another reminder to encourage me to continue following my passions. Number two, my second major takeaway. And this is very similar to my work as a teacher, is that you never truly understand the impact of what you're doing. You never know your impact. You rarely see the results of what you're doing. Vincent van Gogh struggled for many years mentally. He struggled mentally, but he also struggled professionally as an artist. He never understood while he was alive the reach of his work and the impact of his work. And again, that was inspiring for me too, to understand that just because you don't see it, just because you aren't conscious or aware of the exact impact of your work or your research or your reach, whether it's as an artist or a teacher or whatever you're doing, doesn't mean that people aren't being impacted. You know, I may never see it. Sometimes I do. You know, I just picked up a pizza when I was down by my mother-in-law's house, and I walked in there and I was just expecting to have a very kind of normal interaction, very benign interaction with the cashier. And he goes, well, I just revealed my last name. I'm going to have to edit that out. I said, yes. And he's like, you taught me. And, you know, I love those interactions, but I've never walked away with them completely satisfied, because I'm never happy with how I handled it, because a lot of times I won't fully remember who they are until like I'm in the car and it's too late and I'm just like kicking myself, because then all of a sudden everything starts flooding back. I remember exactly where they sat. I remember all these different interactions that I had with them, but I'm like under so much pressure in that moment, or I wasn't expecting to have that interaction. So I'm like scrambling for data and information, and I don't always come away with a very fulfilling or very satisfied encounter, and I feel terrible about it. But it was so fulfilling because he remembered so many details from that class, and he was so appreciative of what I was doing. And, you know, that was one of the very few moments, you know, as a teacher that we can hold on to and we can use as inspiration and as a reminder that our work does matter and our work does make a difference. The third major takeaway is to be grateful for your support. You know, Vincent van Gogh never felt the support that we are so accustomed to giving. He never did. Someone as profound and revered as Vincent van Gogh never felt supported, never felt appreciated. And so every single time that I get a like or a follow or a sale or just a website hit, that is something that Vincent van Gogh literally never experienced. You know, because of technology, obviously. Maybe if he had those platforms, you know, maybe that would have impacted him differently. Maybe he would have received support in that way. Maybe not. But it changed my perspective, because for the first season, and for the first year or first, yeah, for the first year or so, it just felt like it was never enough. And that's how I've really tried to change my mindset, that I can't rely on outside validation to continue my work, that I have to be content within myself. And I can't wait for that. I can't rely on that. And when you read about someone that is so remarkable within the profession that I am currently in as an oil painter, to see someone that has made such a difference and has impacted and inspired and influenced so many people, for them to not be appreciated in their day and age makes you realize that there's no guarantee that my work will ever be fully supported. But that doesn't mean that one day maybe it will. And that I have to be grateful for every sign of support while I'm here. The last big takeaway was a takeaway that I fully wasn't expecting, that I've alluded to many times in this episode already. But I found that there is a way to communicate with people that are no longer here, whether they are living in another area of the world or whether they are deceased. You can communicate with them by literally following in their footsteps, visiting places that they lived, pursuing their interests and passions. You know, I discovered that idea by trying to repaint Starry Night and trying to deconstruct his style so I could duplicate it. And I started to connect with an artist. I started to feel like I was being taught by someone that was no longer living. And so you can apply that same idea with other people in your life. You know, pursuing their passions, participating in events or activities that they participated in, and reliving those same emotions and actions that they performed. And so this piece took me on a journey that I wasn't expecting. And in truth, every single piece takes me on a journey that I'm not expecting at some level. But I wanted to take some time to really break down what that painting means to me, what Vincent van Gogh means to me, and I hope that you're able to apply those same lessons in your own life, whether you're an artist or whether you're pursuing something completely different. I hope that you realize that you can't rely on other people to support you. You have to find inner peace within yourself. You have to find that confidence and that support within yourself. And just because you don't see that support right away doesn't mean that one day you'll see it. And that whenever you are missing someone that is close to you, there's a way that you can connect with them. Visit those places. Practice those behaviors. Participate in those activities. And I think you'll find that you're connecting with those people in a way that you never expected to experience. So again, thank you for your support. Thanks for waiting a day to download the episode. And I'll talk to you all next week.
Thanks for listening to the Painting the Midnight Oil podcast. Come back soon.